Order of the day, government motion, the Honourable Deputy Minister. Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to be the motion standing in my name, which is the story. This House calls upon the Leader of the Opposition to disclose the identity of the person, entity or entities who funded the £100,000, £100,000 sterling cost of the Lloyd's Register report titled the Gibraltar LNG Terminal Risk Assessment. Where is it today? Many things have happened since I moved the motion, which I have just read in the terms in which I presented it. It is to be that one of the most important things that has happened since I moved that motion is unrelated to the substance of it, but was stated by you, Mr. Speaker, at the beginning of this meeting, in which you asked all members, and specifically asked myself and the Leader of the Opposition, to try to tone down the level of acrimony in the debate of the beginning. I told you, Mr. Speaker, immediately that you uttered those words, but I would certainly reflect on what you had implored us to do. And if you speak of today, I will, of course, seek to make my intervention one which is in keeping with your statement as to your feelings about the tenor and pitch of the debate and the proceedings in this House. I'm mindful, Mr. Speaker, that you made a ruling at the beginning of this meeting, and that what you said about tone and acrimony was not part of your ruling, but your expressing your own heartfelt feelings as to the sometimes acrimonious tone of the debate. Mr. Speaker, let me start by saying that in politics, or at least in politics in Gibraltar, one gets used to being the subject of robust linguistic exchanges, if I could characterize them in that way. We have an adversarial system of laws, we have an adversarial system of court proceedings, and we have an adversarial political system that has not served the community badly. And it's been the case for many years that is the position, Mr. Speaker. The halcyon days long past, Mr. Speaker, were not ones in which there wasn't also strong disagreement and strong debate on any less important or indeed any less relevant subject, and the debate was in no way less robust. And I know, Mr. Speaker, that you're a political animal yourself, and that you've long relished the political argument, but I get it, Mr. Speaker, when you tell us that you want us to stop not debating, but you want to see us debating a style which is less acrimonious and more befitting this Parliament in some way. And I'll certainly try and reach for a higher standard in that respect, as I always have. I believe, Mr. Speaker, that our democracy frames and deserves that. And I do not believe that I have ever failed the higher standard in that respect, and I think it's important that we look at some of the recent debates in that respect in a moment. But, Mr. Speaker, as I start on this motion and on this debate, you will allow me for one moment to remind members of the House of the practice of others in this place before your time here, before your second time here, if I might put it that way, Mr. Speaker. Indeed, it was just under 4 years ago, in September 2011, that I was the subject of what I call an attack by the then Leader of the House, now Honourable the backbencher, which I believe was and is without precedent in the history of this place. I was called many things, Mr. Speaker. None of them bonito, as they say in Spanish, Mr. Speaker, and not referring to the relative of the speaker. And in particular, Mr. Speaker, I was called unfit. Not generally unfit, Mr. Speaker, it was quite a fair description of my safety and physical fitness, but unfit to govern was in fact the epitaph of the Honourable Backbencher, the then Chief Minister, thought for me. And I say epitaph, Mr. Speaker, because he didn't want it to be my political epitaph. Indeed, you can understand that the Honourable Member had, and I'm delighted to see him here with us today, had promised his colleagues in the GOC at the time that he would finish me off during the course of that debate in September 2011, and in that way secure for himself and his party their so desired fifth successive election win. But it didn't happen. The debate from then in this House, using the strongest possible language of condemnation against me in the mouth of the then Chief Minister, and in the language of the motion passed, something that perhaps we will look at later, did not avail the members opposite of their coveted election prize. Indeed, if I dare say, it reflected on the then Chief Minister and the party he represented in a negative way and turned people off from it. That's why I am so keen to see your call for reflection, Mr. Speaker. That was a tough debate on finances and in respect of what was best referred to as a social media podcast. A tough debate, Mr. Speaker, which when set in the cold light of day, perhaps I should say read in the cold light of day, and analyzed with earth in nail and hand, shows that the debate was characterized by the manner in which the then Chief Minister had not been kept to the rules of debate by the then chair of our proceedings. It's because I have no desire whatsoever to imitate that sort of style. I think I've been gracious in my references to some of the work the Honourable Member has done, especially after his valedictory remarks during the appropriation day. But that part of what he did and how he did it is not something that I ever want to imitate. Consciously or otherwise. Indeed, it's because as a result of that debate, I've always sought not just to ensure that I do not imitate him, but that I conduct myself much more in keeping with the rules of proceeding in this House and the rules of debate. Despite that, Mr. Speaker, after my opening speech on the appropriation debate, on the second evening, what we call the budget debate, when I introduced the bill on the second evening, an introduction that was economic, that set out the success of our nation, that dealt with the measures that were to be applied, that didn't call anyone anything, I was again to be subject by a member of the Supporters Social Democrats represented in this House to much the same tactic I had been subjected to 4 years earlier. So when the Honourable, the now backbencher, had said in 2011 that I was unfit to govern, his now heir and successor, who was talking, Mr. Speaker, his new leader, Mr. Speaker, adopted much the same style by starting his intervention in the budget debate by saying that I was not to be trusted. Not much change in their attitude. The Honourable backbencher and his chosen successor can at least seem to be consistent in at least that way. Despite the many U-turns and the inconsistency that characterizes the leadership now from the leadership before, the one thing they are consistent in, suppose I should take it as a backhanded compliment, is their repeated attempt to disparage and to denigrate me and to bring me down in the estimation of right-thinking people, men are generally members of the public, by attacking my fitness for office, and in particular, whether I should be trusted with it. Needless to say, Mr. Speaker, I did not threaten to see either of them. Nor did I challenge them to repeat anything else that they said here outside of this House.
imagine my surprise then, Mr. Speaker, when I see that the Honourable Leader of the Opposition, the now Leader of the Opposition, stating publicly that I have tried to destroy him, denigrate him, or in some other way disqualify him politically by the things I have said in the debate. Well, he and his predecessor tried to do just that to me and to others and my colleagues in almost every intervention they made. From question time to motions to debates on bills, Mr. Speaker. In fact, there's a shorthand way of referring to what it is that they have been trying to do. Look at least before the line into 17,011 and look forward, but we could look back and see this everywhere also. It is, in layman's terms, attempted character assassination, attempted political character assassination. I might say that's the political game. Not to be said that way. Whether it was to me or the Honourable Mr. Assange, or others on these benches, Mr. Speaker, their tactic has always been the same. Not unsuccessfully, the Honourable, we are now back then tonight, so the four election wins and the four scalps on the side of the political vehicle. But I now understand, Mr. Speaker, and I think the whole of our community now understands, that they consider on benches evidence. And that is a legitimate tactic for them to repeatedly engage in. It is not a legitimate state for them. Even if it is brought about not by character assassination or political character assassination, but by simple disclosure of such as ever the do as I say but not as I do, Mr. Speaker, the holy than thou of the right wing of the political world, Mr. Speaker. So a la partida popular. Because our style, Mr. Speaker, our style, whether we are on this side of the House or on that side of the House, wherever our political state may put us, is not ever to succumb to the lazy trigger of character assassination, but to simply identify and relay facts in debate. In fact, character assassination comes back to haunt secretive assassins, Mr. Speaker. If not, for example, some of my, or if I may say so on behalf of all members of the House, our antagonists across the frontier. In particular, certain individuals in Ireland who have just been attacked in investigations have been sent to Iran, talking about the Gibraltar and six attacks affairs. And so, Mr. Speaker, when the time came to make a statement in this House on what we might for shorthand this morning call the Spark Affair, for which I have to interrupt the debate on the second reading of the Appropriation Bill, I made sure that I stuck to the facts as they were then known to the government. Completely sticking to facts and making no comment in the context of what was a government statement for which I suspended standing orders. And they were, Mr. Speaker, self-evidently damning facts. They didn't require comment. Facts which illustrated that the company that had been responsible for power cuts in the plant that they rented to the government was also the company that had funded the preparation of the report from Lloyd's Register, and that the opposition had presented as being commissioned for the GSD, that's in quotation marks, for the GSD, and I'll come later to when those words were used, by an entity, they said, with no commercial interest in the provision of power or LNG instability. So they said, Mr. Speaker, those are the facts without comment, just the bare facts. Mr. Speaker, when I returned to the subject in the course of my reply on the second reading of the Appropriation Bill, I was closing for the government in that debate, I was equally determined to stick to the facts. And where I did not stick to the facts, I caveated my intervention and even agreed that one instance to withdraw an inference which the leader of the opposition objected to, telling him that I hoped his assertions were correct in the interest of our democracy. I think I was praised by many supporters and non-supporters for my intervention in that debate. The handset of that reply is now available, I see, on the Parliament website, and I once again congratulate the Parliament for being able to make handset now available so quickly to members. And the relevant extract reads as follows. I'm now going to read from the handset, Mr. Speaker. I was talking when I said this. It is one thing, Mr. Speaker, to take industrial action, give notice of when you are going to do it, and be covered by the trade union and business back in the 1970s and 1980s to fight for parity and pay rises. It is quite difficult, Mr. Speaker, to bring about power cuts in the country with the largest gaming industry on earth during a Euro qualifying game. Mr. Beaton then gets up and he says this, I'm quoting him, Mr. Speaker. Point of order, Mr. Speaker. He is now completely going beyond what is reasonable and what is parliamentary. What he is really saying, and which is completely and utterly untrue, it is false to the country. He is saying that I have been at the centre of a conspiracy so that there are power cuts. That is absolutely untrue, Mr. Speaker, and that kind of accusation has never been made in this House, and he is reaching parliamentary rules, and he is exceeding what is proper by a country mile. And I know because it has been brought to my attention that he is far has today come out with a statement actually disputing any question of them being responsible for our time. But Mr. Speaker, what he's saying about me is absolutely false. It is not true, and quite frankly, it should be brought to order because this is unparliamentary and beyond the rules of the country. You did not have to speak, Mr. Speaker. Hansard reflects that the next statement is mine. Mr. Speaker, I say, I am prepared to accept the position that the Honourable Gentleman took. He says he has nothing to do with it, and I sincerely hope, for the sake of our democracy, that he does not. And he says he does not, I have no evidence to suggest the contrary, and I accept his word. He has told the people of Gibraltar today in Parliament that he has nothing to do with it, and has been talking only about it. So, Mr. Speaker, he says he has nothing to do with it, and as a Democrat and as a member of this Parliament, I sincerely hope that turns out to be true. We will see. We will let the investigation take their course, Mr. Speaker, but he will accept it if it turns out that he is found to be involved. Then his denial today will be even more of an indictment of his involvement and will mean that he is finished. Not just as leader of the opposition, but politically, forever. But look, I accept his position. Mr. Speaker, the rest of my speech is also worth rereading now, and I commend the good reading of it to all those who might have time. The summer coming, and it's not a bad few pages of the handstand. But there was nothing of a speech out of the leader of the opposition. The fact, Mr. Speaker, that I disclosed in my speech which were damning of the Honourable Leader of the Opposition. Not the language I used. Not because of any breach of the rules of debate. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Fitton did not raise any other objection during the course of the debate after that. Not a peep. But because the fact that they stood then to the knowledge of the government, presented to the public was damning of the leader of the opposition and his side significance for the now chairman of the GSP, who enjoys greater prominence than many of its elected members, Mr. Trevor Cannon, who seems to have taken much objection if he left this house then. It was fact, Mr. Speaker, that damned him. Not any conjecture, not any speculation, not any language, parliamentary or unparliamentary or otherwise, that I might be chosen to employ, just the plain fact. And things have moved on and have become, in the government view, even more damning of the conduct of the politics of the Gibraltar Social Democrats under the leader of the honourable, the leadership of the honourable member of the group. And that's what I'm going to refer to today, Mr. Speaker. And I can imagine that even just the thought of that, just the thought of that, makes the honourable member opposite nervous. It's the fact, Mr. Speaker, that makes him tremble, not the tone of the debate. Because the problem with that, Mr. Speaker, is that they just don't go away. They don't disappear, and they don't lie. They have a nasty habit, Mr. Speaker, of demonstrating the truth that will always stubbornly come out. Just like in the case of the podcast debate, Mr. Speaker, the fitness debate. Where I was, Mr. Speaker, convincing, uncannily, 4 months later, when the election was over, proved right. When I showed people the doomsday memo that the financial secretary provided to us, which demonstrated we were actually about to achieve the ceiling of debt, and the previous chief minister demonstrated I was right by inviting me at the ceremonial opening of the House to bring a resolution to accept the achieve the debt limit that he had said he will wait for it. And in the case of the Spark affair, the facts get curiouser and curiouser and the reality clearer and clearer. You see, Mr. Speaker, when we first brought this motion, the public had been told by the Honourable Mr. Speaker and his sidekick chairman that the cost of the report prepared by Lloyd's Register had been £100,000. But the party that had been so opaque in government for 16 years and had spent 3 years in opposition calling for greater transparency at that time would not tell us who had paid the alleged £100,000 for the GSD. But you see, the Speaker and Director of Spark, Mr. Damon Cahera, as I think I've already heard about, had come to the office of the Minister and had in the presence of officials who are witnesses to the fact, specifically told the Chief Minister to his face, to the Minister for Utilities, to his face, and to the Chief Executive Officer of the Gibraltar Electricity Authority, to his face, that Spark cannot have anything to do with the preparation of the Lloyd's Register report. But that was the position at the time of the presentation and wording of this motion. But things moved on, Mr. Speaker. And by the time we reach the second reading of the appropriation bill, we need have been Spark who had funded the report in question. And there is nothing wrong with funding reports, Mr. Speaker. But there is a lot wrong with a government contractor who has failed in its duty to provide the services contracted, compounding their failure by stating what I will call for the purposes of today, the opposite of the truth to the face of their client in the face of the Chief Minister himself. And that is the nub of the issue, Mr. Speaker. And it will bring to propose an amendment to this motion as it presently stands, given that its text has been overtaken by them. So, the Speaker, now that we know who funded the Lloyd's report, I move to amend the motion by the deletion of all the words after this house and the replacement of them by the following new words. Mr. Speaker, this house and then the following. Recognizes the importance of a reliable, modern, clean, sustainable, safe, and affordable power supply to Gibraltar for its political, economic, and social welfare and development. welcome Her Majesty's Government has acknowledged its commitment to public consultation and provision of information in its proposal for the new fuel power station. Condemned all and any attempt to conflate, distort, and thereby misuse any report prepared by recognized independent experts for partisan political gain, for commercial self-interest by any party, or purposes that work against the general public interest and transparency, and so therefore, in the public interest of the whole of the community, hereby calls on the leader of the opposition, in the spirit of transparency that he so often espouses, to instruct Lloyd's Register Energy, or in the alternative, call upon the Spark Group of Companies to instruct Lloyd's Register Energy to release the original, full, and unredacted, and otherwise edited version of their report directly to the Speaker of this Parliament for distribution to all members and general publication in Gibraltar, as well as full disclosure of the cost of the report paid by the Spark Group of Companies. Because I hereby give written notice of this proposed amendment. Can I wait for the amendment to be circulated to the Speaker? Okay, I'll wait. I don't need to speak, I had it special. I think I left them in my desk. That's why I need to be there. So I wait for the Speaker, this is and must really be unobjectionable language for all parties who come to this debate with a clear conscience. And that's why I worded my amendment in this way. It's not a motion condemning anyone. It is a motion condemning behavior that nobody can defend. And it is a motion calling for unimpeachable clarity. Because, Mr. Speaker, you see, this is about shining a light on things. My motion today is about power. Not, I should add, the power which the Honourable Leader of the Opposition so assiduously and eagerly seeks, nothing wrong with that, but the power that keeps our businesses operating, our babies warm, and our homes illuminated. The power we have to ensure is securely supplied. The motion had originally focused, as you know, Mr. Speaker, on the anonymity behind the alleged £100,000 report, which was attributed to World Register and circulated by the opposition, in what has become their electoral campaign of no to anything LNG. In fact, Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful that the Honourable Leader of the Opposition has recently made that clear, that in the election campaign, in fact, he has said, they will run, will be an entirely negative one. He has told GBC's Jonathan Sacramento that there will be only one issue or platform for them, and that is no to LNG. Well, nothing new there, Mr. Speaker, because all of their past campaigns have always been just no to the GFLP. So I guess it's only the initials of what they're against when you say change. No, nay, negative. That will be their answer. Be it to the supply and storage of liquefied natural gas to the new power station, or even to the new power station beneath the above. No, nine, negative. So that would be their mantra in respect of LNG bunkering, which would be a key element in the business which I've talked of until now being one of the most significant players in the Mediterranean, is bunkering. And with the figure of 14 Algeciras is working hard on trying to establish for themselves in competition with them. So they're saying, yes, please, por favor. And we're saying, in the face of the leader of the opposition, no, nine. Negative. That's going to be the election campaign for the GBC. Well, Mr. Speaker, the government has now been able to establish, the government has established, that the Spark Group Companies is behind the funding of the report, a version of what was released by the Honourable Relief of the Commission, I will not question what its motives were in releasing the report in the form in which it was released. But I will say, Mr. Speaker, that the fact that their motives which members of the public would be able to observe. But sadly, Mr. Speaker, this is a very serious issue. There is more at play here than just a mischievous political tactic by a leader of an opposition. And I shall be calling on him, Mr. Speaker, to reflect on some of the statements he has made to the public, and perhaps, Mr. Speaker, trusted and relied on himself. The last few months, we've heard a great deal about experts, but the real experts have yet to be heard, Mr. Speaker, in their unredacted, independent voice. Some experts in propaganda and distortion have had a field day in playing with public opinion and manipulating notions of fear among some of the most vulnerable in our population. The tools of those experts in distortion have been misrepresentation, deception, and all of it has been held together, Mr. Speaker, by clear self-interest. I'm not going to once again go through the whole story of neglect of the power station and the power network that this government inherited from the previous administration. I'm not going to talk about the failure to take up recommendations made by in-house experts given over the decades, which might have solved the problem. People know how many power factors have to be upgraded because of failing infrastructure. Infrastructure that should have been replaced over a decade ago. And we all know, Mr. Speaker, that Gibraltar has to have its own independent power supply. As far as this side of the House is concerned, dependency on failing is not an option now, tomorrow, or ever. We need a reliable power supply because Gibraltar has to fend for itself and provide security to the people and the many industries established here and those that may look to come and invest in the rock. Did I mistake it, Mr. Speaker? Some of our contractors were good at going through main cables in finding petrol with those things that pile. We might actually be much wealthier than we are. We also have to ensure, Mr. Speaker, that we're doing our best to meet international standards and requirements to cut pollution. That has to be put in the balance as well. These are standards, Mr. Speaker, that we fully agree with because they are primarily aimed at minimizing the impact on people's lives and their health. These are not esoteric projects set for no profit. This is about what we breathe in and what it does to our bodies. And that is what we have been working on with our own Gibraltar experts, who are no less expert than those from outside Gibraltar, since the day that we were elected. Thanks to members of the failure to invest in power before our time, grimy, smelly diesel, very missiles in which they GSD, has been belting out the Waterford Power Station and down at Jumpers for many years longer than they should have. And indeed, Mr. Speaker, if they had been re-elected, they would have commissioned, they say already, we doubt that, a new facility to burn even more grimy, smelly diesel. And if they are elected now, they are committing themselves again, Mr. Speaker, to finish our power station, because we started before the election, but not to burn clean LNG in it. They are committing themselves to burn grimy, smelly diesel in it. Just across the bay in Argentina, for some time, and even now as we speak, port operators, there and beyond, are keenly engaged in seeing how they can be ready for the LNG bunkering market as this is emerging. Gibraltar's economy today has to keep looking forward to the future and to diversification in order to continue to enjoy our standard of privileged prosperity. Not just in financial services, not just in gaming. We have to have an eye to where the service is going, and where online gaming is going, and where financial services is going. Shouldn't we have the same keen eye on where banking is going? Anybody with a keen eye can see that banking is going the direction of LNG. The percentages may be different depending on who makes the estimate of where the banking market in LNG or diesel will be. It may fluctuate depending on whether an estimation is made in a year where diesel is at a low price or a high price. It may depend on how quickly the European Commission moves on its agenda to reduce emissions in the Mediterranean. But if we don't know, if we don't have an eye to the future, then Algeciras and Ceuta and Tangier will fulfill their aspirations, which some in our community don't seem to share, to be seen as the gateway for banking in that commodity when accessing the Mediterranean. And you cannot build an LNG banking market in a day, Mr. Speaker. Today, we are a leading banking force, and I can tell the crowd that we are fully confident that we can be a leading player in the LNG market tomorrow as well. But not if the member opposite has his way. He's already said no name to the concept of LNG storage, without which there can be no LNG bunkering. Instead, Mr. Speaker, our attitude is to say that we can achieve Gibraltar's continued growth in the banking industry by focusing on excellence, on meeting all standards of safety, and doing everything necessary to give us a solid reputation in that market, and at the same time ensure that, of course, our people are protected. We can also, Mr. Speaker, ensure the continued growth of our tourist industry by being able to service the cruise ships which are being built with onboard LNG storage tanks and regasification facilities. These two would necessarily be banned from our shores by the legal regulations if there could be one fibre of consistency in any of his arguments in relation to LNG. Indeed, it's because I understand that some of these ships will have LNG storage tanks which would be close in size to the LNG tanks being proposed for Gibraltar. But that's not just our view, Mr. Speaker. Everything I've said is not the GSLP Liberal political government saying this. From the port to the DEA to the Department of the Environment, that is the advice we are being given by the same experts who will advise members opposite if they were ever to form government again. That is what our experts are telling us we should aspire to achieve. But given that nobody can stop us in their own lives, let's be clear, Mr. Speaker, it is also the advice we are getting from internationally renowned experts. In fact, I should add that it has been put very emphatically to us by Lloyd's Register, not by the Health and Safety Laboratory, not by any in-house expert, but by Lloyd's Register, that it must be our aim to be fully engaged in the LNG banking market and the opportunities that it will bring. By Lloyd's Register. Mr. Speaker, it is them, Lloyd's Register, who are saying that they believe Gibraltar has a good future in the LNG market that is coming and that we must be a part of it. Not another group of experts. Not one group of experts we say are better than the experts the member opposite relied on to say that LNG could never be done safely here. Actually, it's the same group who said, via their Mr. Nick Brown, that the report of Lloyd's Register, as published by members opposite, was made up in its presentation of conflations, and this is a quote, conflations and distortions. Speaker, I have the chronicle of Thursday, the 26th of June, 2015. And in that report of what Mr. Brown said at page 21, just opposite the column that says the people have died of the growth of politics, says the chief minister. There, Mr. Speaker, Nick Brown of Lloyd's Register says something which I think is worth quoting to the whole of this House. I'm going to read the three paragraphs, Mr. Speaker, of the report in the Chronicle so that it is set in context and nobody can accuse me of setting it out of context. I'm going to be very parliamentary in the way that I read it, Mr. Speaker. If I'm going to read four paragraphs. In issuing the statement, Lloyd's Register acknowledged that since it presented the report to the Commission and client, the document had been placed in the public domain and cited in political exchanges in Gibraltar. Nick Brown, the company's brand and external relations manager, says Lloyd's Register wanted to ensure there was clear understanding as to its role as an impartial risk assessor and the nature and scope of the report. He said the company is uncomfortable with some of the media reports being published as a result of the political clash over this issue. Then the Chronicle opened quotation marks and said this: there were clearly some conflations and distortions of what the report was about. Close quotation marks. He told the Chronicle in a telephone interview yesterday. Page 21 of the Chronicle of Thursday, the 25th of June. That was not the headline of the article, Mr. Speaker. But it was right there in the verbatim quote of the published interview. I'm surprised it wasn't the headline, but look, that's not a matter for a politician. Mr. Speaker, of course we also understand the concerns of people, the lay people. Talk about that, and you have one of the two leading political figures in that political party saying, this is unsafe, it can't be done without risk, the world's experts say it cannot be done. And we have to balance that national interest and individual interest, and that always seems to be a challenge. Explaining issues like this in a way that is not going to blind people to someone. But something should always be a given. Something should always be clear. Something should always be unimpeachable, whoever forms government after an election. And that is that none of us in this House are ever going to do anything where the safety and security of our people will be called into question. Of course, it's true that people would prefer any industrial site to be as far as possible from their own home. I think that's called NIMBYism. But that's so easy, Mr. Speaker, in a place that is 2 miles by 1 mile. We've long had to work in Gibraltar to ensure our safety when we are able to also do things that will not traditionally be done anywhere near a conurbation in the way that it's done here. An airport. A ZBIR. The NOV, Mr. Speaker, have been our partners for some safety. From cannons to nuclear submarines, all of them pass here. And we've always welcomed them. Fortress life, siege life, is unfortunately in our blood. The whole world actually wonders at landings at our airport. It's almost the ninth wonder of the world. Of course there are airports with lower risk factors than ours in terms of location. I have no doubt of that, but I will make this concession to Mr. Hammond and his colleagues at Air Traffic Control. We, the government, and every member of the community, we collectively all trust the measures they take and that were devised by experts to lower the risk. I have never challenged or questioned Mr. Hammond's expertise as an air traffic controller. It's his lack of expertise whatsoever on LNG that I highlight, and his different appetite to risk and respect again. But those risks of flying are never zero. And they're not just risks for those who are flying or being flown in the aircraft. There are risks in particular in Gibraltar geography for anybody who might be affected by an aircraft that we said will never happen. But the risk of it happening can never be zero, which is the parameter that members of it have set for LNG. Mr. Hammond and Mr. Peterson will know that by setting of that standard, what they are ensuring is that no bus ever runs, no vehicle is ever driven, and of course the only answer to LNG can ever be no. But not just LNG, everything else. They might have forgotten the explosion of a tank that was burning diesel to produce electricity last Easter at multiple power stations. But Mr. Speaker, we must strive always to keep up with technology and progress. And those people who have perhaps in the past few days seen reports in the United Kingdom will now be satisfied of the substantial scientific evidence that regards diesel as largely the dirtiest fuel and a serious risk to health. We owe it to our people, Mr. Speaker, to ensure that we move to a more healthy as well as a safer means of producing power. The slogan must really be not no to LNG, but no to pollution. And believing, Mr. Speaker, we are under considerable pressure from the EU to reduce the current levels of emissions in our air. But sadly, Mr. Speaker, the story I'm telling is not one where much on the opposite benches seems to be concerned about health and safety in respect to emissions. In fact, Mr. Speaker, I'm sure that as they quietly walk away from standing with the Honourable Belinda Wittgenstein at the general election, some members of it may have cottoned down to what it is that is happening in their name. Oh, indeed, Mr. Speaker, I think it should pause there. And be so bold as to suggest a title for the GOC's manifesto for this election. It might actually look quite good with a big narcissistic photo of the Honourable Belinda Wittgenstein in the same page. And with the word, and then they were none, emblazoned on the front. Because, Mr. Speaker, often in Gibraltar we reflect historically on the events of 1972 as the big lie election. The big lie election of this generation will not be a debate about what some might or might not have been willing to consider in relation to Spain, which is the issue of 72. None of that should ever happen on our watch. It's not something that will ever worry people with the GOC liberals at the helm. No, the big lie election would be about a calculated deception carried out ruthlessly, exploiting people's natural fears, and carried out with a deliberate misuse of a brand name like that of Rose Bridgestone. We could also talk about the one in 2007, which was the one about no cherry picking, which has been demonstrated to have been a big lie by people from beyond our shores, but anyway, that seems to carry out of it for one. The big lie would be a tactical deception, which pretends, Mr. Speaker, that this side of the house, which is your liberal, would be even prepared to consider entering into a major and critical infrastructure project, absolutely indifferent and reckless to issues of safety, and to be joined in that negligent endeavor by some of the world's leading blue chip companies, by some of the world's leading health and safety assessment of risk, and by all of the experts of the government of Gibraltar. If it is speaker, there are facts, and then there is what is put out there by Mr. Peterson himself. Because at the best of times, what is said in opposition, Mr. Speaker, invariably only carries the weight of ambition to take over government. conversely, Mr. Speaker, government decisions must carry the burden of responsibility and careful due diligence. And we in government, Mr. Speaker, have the obligation to work with great officials and professionals to achieve what is best for our country using our skills and resources to their fullest extent. We must have a task force. We must have some air to the focus of the care that we produce these safely and responsibly. And in assessing which side is right, the sequence of events and statements in this matter in the past few months is of crucial importance. But before I get into that, Mr. Speaker, let me just speak historically. But at no time has any decision, revision of decision, or instruction been made other than according to the best advice received by the government, from our experts and from internationally recognized experts. There has been a painstaking, stage-by-stage approach, and with a commitment throughout to be transparent with facts when we have them to hand in a meaningful way. We've listened constantly, indeed, to people who even listen outside government. Because on March the 6th this year, as the ESG aired their views, music we always listen to with great respect, we issued a statement assuring the public that we would keep it fully informed and consulted. I quote from our press release 145. The government takes this opportunity to reiterate that the necessary copious studies and assessments regarding the proposals are underway and that there will be a full public consultation upon their conclusion. That could not be clearer. I reiterate that commitment and the reassurance of the Maltese government that we will not take any steps that would not conform with the best international standards and advice. Lloyd's Register is a major international name in the shipping, energy and safety world. It's owned not by shareholders out to make money, but by a foundation, and it is fiercely and brightly proud of its independence. We've experienced that firsthand, when it has bent over backwards to meet those standards in its dealings with us. We have detailed, over time, in numerous public statements, the steps being taken and our engagement of experts. But the opposition has wanted to create a mess that no safety report has been prepared or has been prepared. The safety report, Mr. Speaker, is necessarily organic. As designs and plans change and adapt to circumstances, which are technical, physical, or legal in nature, that's how projects work. That's how prisons cost double what they set out to cost. That's how courts cost more than double what they initially budgeted to cost, let alone airports. The safety experts of the companies working with us are making proposals, have been working continuously. They will only receive the final verdict on their work when independent experts, in this case the Health and Safety Lab, will have their final submission from the company. If the review by HSL and now a further review by Rolls Register requires changes to be made, they too will be subsequently reviewed by HSL and then by Rolls Register. They have the final say, like all professionals, they work together in an open and transparent way. We're not asking Lloyd's Register to design LNG storage and supply facilities. We're asking them to look at both the final proposals and the H&L safety report. People have been involved in reviewing proposals every step of the way. And we all know this, Speaker, that the only reason for this self-embracing approach is that the government would not be otherwise. But as to it, Mr. Speaker, the cynical campaign that we have to suffer of what Nick Brown refers to as distortion and which the world has been subjected to. And I use that word distortion, Mr. Speaker, because it's the one that echoes the words of Lloyd's Register when they were shocked to see what was being done with their report. It's become inevitable, Mr. Speaker, to engage with Lloyd's Register to ensure that their independent judgment is not further abused. The government wants their good advice. We're very happy to now work with Lloyd's Register And I publicly undertake, Mr. Speaker, that the government will obviously not interfere with Lloyd's Register in carrying out its task. We will make the instructions to them and the assumptions that we work on public, and their full report will be made available unredacted. And in our statement of the 6th of March 2015, we also made clear that public consultation will involve our already named experts, including the Health and Safety Laboratory Group. At that time, members of the public and BEC will be able to ask questions, to comment, and to voice any remaining concerns. We echo the ESU's view, Mr. Speaker, that the priority is to move towards completion of the new facility, but only after due diligence has been ensured and the environmental impact assessment process has been completed to international standards and all necessary health and safety situations have been properly addressed. I don't think we could be clearer, but I understand, Mr. Speaker, that the opposition have muddied the waters and that the cost now of engaging the additional expertise and advice of the Register will be worth every penny. We would rather have been in the position of having the power station up and running long ago, of course we would, Mr. Speaker. But we also have to put up with the opposition's ransom over 16 years in government when they did nothing on the subject. And they still have the gall, Mr. Speaker, to lull or laugh out loud on Twitter when there's a power cut. It's a kind of joke for them, Mr. Speaker. Sad and cynical, Mr. Speaker. This is a very serious issue. And so, let us look at the core of this motion. Who is really behind it? The commissioning and the abuse of the Lloyd's Register report. The abuse of a world brand hallmark and a doctored report trying to sabotage Gibraltar's future power plan. And our goal is cleaner air, our basic economic resources and opportunities. Mr. Speaker, while the government is engaged in the process of working carefully towards finalizing all aspects of the power station project, the opposition has engaged over several months in a campaign of partly Google, partly referring to experts, in demonizing LNG, the series of unrelated and often factual examples, basically in social media. But of course, the LNG experts that they were talking about, who were saying that LNG was not safe, could not be Lloyd's, Mr. Speaker, the ones that they eventually came out with. Because Lloyd's go around the world doing the very opposite. They go around the world evangelizing the prospects for LNG, even in crowded urban community areas. And when you look at the chronology of this, it's helpful in revealing some of what might have been happening. On June 6, 2015, after some discussion about the experts, Mr. Peter took to a podcast to reveal that Lloyd's Register had carried out a report. So this is after the Aduo Peter Cannon film on the North Node. Then there's the June 10th press conference, where Mr. Hammond not only put himself forward as an expert on LNG, and at times appears to be speaking to Lloyd's Register, what he's saying, but claims that the report has cost some £100,000. Indeed, Mr. Hammond specifically told BBC's Jonathan Segmento that the report had, and I quote, this is a quote from Mr. Hammond, effectively being funded by a third party who supports the GOP and are willing to commission this report on our behalf. Those are the words of Mr. Hammond, the chairman of the GOP. But yet we now reliably understand that the amount paid to Lloyd's Register is significantly less than £100,000. And that the report, according to Spark, was not commissioned for the GSD, but shared with them once completed. So even as to price and as to commissioning, it would appear that the community has not yet had full disclosure of the real commission. Mr. Speaker, many will have cause to think why a generous donor who is earning substantial profit from a contract with the government would be afraid to reveal who they are. Not least in the stated reason of doing this for solely philanthropic purposes, for the well-being of Gibraltar, nothing less. Perhaps even more serious is that under pressure of being told that they have substantially redacted the report, they suddenly decide to issue what they now say is the full report of Thursday. So that report which had not been redacted, they now say, well, I'm not going to give you the full one. The first one wasn't redacted, but I'm going to give it to you unredacted. We were told that the only thing that had been not published written was only the cover page. Why can't the cover page be published in the first instance? What is so dramatic in a cover page? And they said they should not only hide Spark's name, but the name of the Lord's Register personnel responsible for the report. The Spark wants to know, the blank out spelling, I don't see why they would want it. But why also not reveal the personnel at Lloyd's responsible for the report? Well, because you can see that this has all been a game, and a responsible game, and a game that's been played on the people of Gibraltar and at the expense of their security. The government has held meetings with the parties responsible for the preparation of the report. And I can tell the House that what I read you from Miss Brown in the front of it, because only the tip of the iceberg of how unhappy Lloyd's are with the political abuse their report has been the subject of. Read what they said in public carefully. They're an international firm with a brand to preserve. They're quite cautious in what they say. They, like us, want to get onto the real work of providing that safe, clean, and reliable new power plant that Gibraltar urgently needs. But look at the quote from Ms. Brown, that there were three conflations and distortions of what the report was about. That's a hugely damning statement from the authors of the report about the way it's been presented by the Honourable Member opposite and Mr. Hammond. Imagine if someone had said that about something I had said. The Honourable Member, perhaps Mr. Hammond, and sure not some others, who have a higher personal regard than Lord Anne Hesterland, but certainly Mr. Hammond, Speaker Mr. Hammond, would be setting up the gallows in Caithness and contracting a gun carriage to carry me to it from here. If anybody was able to accurately say that I had conflated and distorted anything which I presented to the House. It's a good thing the Honourable and Alf Adventure is not in charge at a time when I can be said to have conflated and distorted anything. The political flagellation I would have had would have taken the skin off my back right through to my lungs. If I had conflated and distorted something in the view of the person who prepared the report. Not in his view, but in the view of the person who prepared the report that I have then misdescribed. Because let's be clear, these are not my words about what Mr. Heaton and Mr. Hammond have presented. These are not the government's words. These are the words of Lloyd's Register, Nick Brown. A conflation and distortion of the report. And that, Mr. Speaker, those words in that report in the Gibraltar Chronicle on Thursday, the 25th of June 2015, that is now therefore an objective fact. An objective fact that presents the book on which the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition has focused himself. An objective fact for which he cannot get away. The world renowned experts that he so eagerly sought to talk up and rely on, who are rightly recognised as leaders in the field, who are the evangelists for faith LNG in our areas, they are the ones who now describe the Heaton Hammond tandem as conflated and distorted in the presentation of their report. And let's go back to the text of the report itself. Why hide the cover page and the inside page? But those two people tell that. What those two people actually reveal is that whilst the revised and final version of the report was signed up in June last month, the draft report was in fact ready in March. And Mr. Speaker, it would appear to me that the leader of the opposition was essentially continuing in this structure at the time, because he thought he had a torpedo that could sink the submarine. Because it's clear that he and his lifeline fighters seem to believe that draft report reveals that any form of LNG activity in any of the Baltic would be catastrophic and an unacceptable level of risk for the Baltic. But Lloyds have themselves now said that that is not the case. They would not be working with us if the only advice they have is to tell us that the Baltic cannot touch LNG. What they're going to do is analyze final proposals from those bidding, and scrutinize them to ensure they're acceptable. And in any event, as I said already in the second reading, Mr. Speaker, the government and its experts have already discarded the suitability of the use of the site identified in the Royal Register report as unsuitable. Had Spark included our professionals in the meetings for the report, they might have saved time and money, because they wouldn't have looked at those sites. But no Spark work, Mr. Speaker, without consultation to the government authorities. The government actually, however, publicly told Mr. Speaker on the 18th of February 2015, my birthday, that these unidentified experts were working with wrong or incomplete information. But they kept on working with wrong or incomplete information. Even in March 2015, when the government said it was doing due diligence and would ensure safety and was acting on advice from experts, the GSC and Spark could have aired their draft report. But clearly they were not interested in public safety, but in holding out until they and the opposition could play a fiscal card to break it up. Did the leader of the opposition, Mr. Speaker, know that that very month, on March the 26th, 2015, his putative philanthropic benefactor, Spark, having attended a meeting with Lloyd's Register, where the unsuitability of their identified location was the subject of discussion, also then wrote to the government bidding to build a dual power diesel LNG station in the same month, in the same week. In addition to this ITP, independent power producer, power station they were proposing, they suggested, and this is a quote from the Spark document, we, Spark, would also like to discuss the possibility of evaluating investment opportunity of the construction of LNG terminal in Gibraltar. We believe that the first step forward in this matter could be entering into negotiations with GOV of the terms of framework agreement that will establish the basis of our cooperation. I'm not reading in shorthand, that's the English for you. So, Mr. Speaker, whilst they can claim to be philanthropically funding and making available a report saying that LNG is a disaster for Gibraltar, they're seeking a deal with the government on the very subject. In the same month, and in their June 29, 2015 statement, starts with this: we instructed Lloyd's Register to produce a report in January this year. A draft was then provided that confirmed it was not safe to build an installation of a detached or a north mole. The final reply was provided in June. But the sheet that they did and subsequently published demonstrated that they had the draft in March when they were writing to make the proposal. And to see that, the duplicity is staggering. Staggering. And it will be seen as such by members of our community. It is also clear, Mr. Speaker, that Spark were never in the lead to provide LNG to Gibraltar. From even before in August 2014. A proposal from SPARC, LNG storage supply and banking, project description, what do you think of going to work? For Her Majesty's Government of Gibraltar, LNG storage supply and banking, and we put our foot on their proposal. A document with the SPARC logo and the Government of Gibraltar logo proposing LNG storage supply and bunkering.
You don't know the caliber of people who could ever have supplied with LNG. I'm quite happy to publish this. It's a good copy for the Honourable Gentleman who wants to see some of the design. In my meeting with Peter, with the excellent chairman of Lloyd earlier this month, one point that was made very clear is because we've got the big players in the industry are embracing LNG precisely because they are the ones, the blue chip players, that will be capable of investing in plants and people and standards of the required type to provide LNG safety networks here. Of other places in the world. These are the world and Europe's top blue chip experts, and those are the people that we're talking to. The top blue chip companies that do this work. That's the very high standard of operator that we're working with. In fact, it's because there are issues in relation to the SPARC report that I am presently not yet able to discuss, but I invite the public and parliamentarians of integrity on the opposition benches to look back on all the statements and speech, the challenges pointing the government to apologize, they said, the government must apologize. And to do so, look back in light of the fact that this report has actually now been available in raw form for months. That's what we do with the different things. The raw form of the report has been available for months. And yet, after he said that, they published the full report, which contains all the information I might want to. What about the matter of the matter? Was there any grounds for this concern for the public? Well, let's see that. Is the full report now in the public domain? I challenge those of your position to state publicly in the time that you truly believe that the full SPARC Lloyd Presidency report is in the public domain. I challenge him to say that there are no further important or even trivial elements left out. I am inviting Mr. Speaker, since I am giving the benefit of the doubt, as I did during the course of the second meeting, to consider the possibility that he may have been used. And of the hitherto published versions of the report, those of you referred to as raw, may still actually be less than raw, but they may be cooked. And there may still be redacted versions of what Lloyd prepared. And let me say this, that changing the apparent meaning of a report is a substantial redaction error. Whether you approve many pages of dry data, which may mean nothing to us, but may mean a lot to relevant experts, or you can test yourself with a little bit of doctrine, say with changing the title, or the findings with a little bit of word processing. As you see just on the cover sheet, a bit of both, Mr. Speaker, can remove important elements of the information in a complex technical report. It can produce, Mr. Speaker, conflations and distortions. I invite the leader of the position, Mr. Speaker, who is available, to reveal whether he has a totally different version of the report to the one that he published, or to call on SPARC to reveal also who sat round the table with the experts and Lloyd when they came to the building. It is very hard to remember. Who sat round the table when Lloyd came to the building? Because this is far from being a report delivered by the leader of the opposition to save us and our community
what we have found, and we will continue to work to bring fully into the public eye and the relevant authorities and messages, is a manipulation of pages of the report and its meaning, to which the legal opposition is either a party or a victim, duped into presenting something to the public that is incomplete, redacted, or simply, to use the words of Lloyd again, conflated and distorted. Whether he is aware of these deductions already disclosed, or others to be disclosed, of more conflated and distorted, is not something I am asserting. I am asking him, did he know about the conflations and distortions, or was he duped into conflating and distorting? Speak up a little bit, either is a damning in my room. If he is a dupe, imagine if he were to be duped also again in the future, not by the Russian in Spark, but by the Spaniard at the Ministerio de Asuntos Exteriores. Were he and Mr. Hammond duped or tripped into trying to rally the votes of fear in the housing estate? We now know that they knew that the report was commissioned by a commercial interest, although they said otherwise. Did they also know about the redactions that have come to light already, or were they fixed on those? I was quite touched, Mr. Speaker, by Mr. Hammond's reply to the Honourable Dr. Cortez when he cited his expertise and played the card of being a slighted Gibraltarian. I'll tell you about hard working Gibraltarians, Mr. Speaker, who have enough on their plate to be firefighting the reckless and damaging problems being caused by opposition mixtures. The feeble Gibraltarian experts in the Gibraltarian Assistance Authority, ably led by Manolo Alessio, they give everything in seeking to ensure we have a secure supply of power. They're seeking the best fuel source and the safest working and generating environment. Their work is denigrated and disparaged every day by the leader of the opposition and those members of the GOP executive who rubbish the work being done on the safe storage of LNG. Their work is denigrated and disparaged every time there is a power cut and members opposite find it funny and laugh on social media. Whilst our professionals frenziedly and efficiently work to restore power, a Twitter lull is all that some opposites can manage. The great professionals at the Ministry of the Environment who work hard to reduce emissions, not just with a view to our climate change agenda, but also so that we can breathe cleaner air. Tell them that burning diesel, grinding, smelly diesel, is safer than burning gas, in particular in a geography the size of Gibraltar. They will lull their heads off as they lull their heads. Their work, Mr. Speaker, is denigrated and disparaged by the leader of the opposition when he gets up and says that he will burn diesel if he's elected. If he wants to forget emissions for a moment, has he even bothered to work out the fines he will have to pay on carbon credits if we continue to burn diesel? And what about how our port officers and our planning officers are denigrated and disparaged when we are told by the leader of the opposition or the honourable member for Abahadis that they are allowing unsafe ship-to-ship transfer of LNG, or that they might allow a power station to be located in an unsafe location? Denigration and disparagement is what that amounts to. Not of me, but of all of those who put hours of hard work in making sure that what is delivered to Gibraltar is good for our people. Mr. Speaker, the European Union is pressing for clean air on health grounds, and that was precisely why the government turned to look at reducing pollution by using gas as far as possible. Every step of the way, we have stopped and listened to the experts. We have engaged with top players in Europe and the world, and we will publish their advice and redacted. Mr. Speaker, I told the House already, Daniel Cabrera, one of the directors of Spark, sat in my office in front of various witnesses and volunteered the statement that the company of which he was director had nothing to do with the anonymized report that the leader of the opposition had released after months of manipulation to preempt and torpedo the safety and consultation process already being undertaken by the government with leadership figures. A week later, Lloyd's report registered concerns, Spark is in customers, and maybe political rivals, Mr. Speaker. But surely, when their fair faith and truth is sold to the voter's elected leader, whoever he may be, it is a disgrace that this prompts sheer indifference from the person seeking to take that post in future. Imagine a comparable scene in the United Kingdom. A Russian-backed company with a major and lucrative government contract working in secret with the official opposition party. The Russians, in a meeting, lied to the Prime Minister, to David Cameron, in front of a number of witnesses. The leader of the opposition, Ed Miliband, as he would have been at the last election, says, there's nothing wrong with that. Surely not. The rules of debate say that I cannot impute an improper motive to any member of the House. I will not do so in respect of any member of the House. But if they really wanted to get to the bottom of whether LNG was safe or not, surely they would have wanted to get the government's interest so that the report they prepared might be accurate, instead of the nonsense they have put to those and which they have subsequently conflated and distorted. Again, those involved in the preparation of the Rose Report were surprised at how it had been presented by the opposition. A very narrow and early stage assessment of a very specific point being generalized as a global statement on LNG and the possibility of it being used in development, whether it's supply fields without fishing or to be bunkered. In fact, Mr. Speaker, I know that it would be difficult to believe, and given the way that Mr. Cahill has behaved, maybe this is not worth the paper in which I quoted from, but even the totally distributed spark said this in their press release of the 29th of June. Spark did provide government with our vision of building an LNG bunkering facility at the Detroit Mall. As we have said in one of our earlier public statements, on the 29th of June, they say this. We believe there is a safe way and location for an LNG installation in Gibraltar. In this regard, we note that the GSP is skeptical about the use of LNG, whilst we are not. So even Spark, even the director of Spark, who is now allegedly a long-term member of the GSP, who supported the leader of the opposition with this report, and an alleged £100,000, well, I mean, you can really look after him, Mr. Speaker, because I understand there aren't many long-standing members of the GSP left. Even he doesn't appear to agree with the one platform on which the Honourable Member has said he will fight the next election, which is no to LNG. You really shouldn't make this stuff up, Mr. Speaker. We, Mr. Speaker, and I include there our experienced positions, were surprised at some of the elements missing from the report as released by the GSP. Open source, comparable final report by Lloyd's Register under the same team leadership that we now know when the transcript was finally disclosed, when the unredacted report was finally published in a further, apparently unredacted form. Under the same leadership, all of their reports include published detailed worksheets of the meetings that took place, where they take place, who is participating, what their qualifications and expertise is, even down to whether or not they were there for the whole of the meeting or just part of it. All of that information is always published with the Lloyd's Register report. It's not published with this one. Even this one, which is prepared by the same team that publishes all the other instances. And so, this time I pose a fresh question for the Honourable Leader of the Opposition and for staff. For him, in replying to this debate, who was taken to those meetings? In any normal process, the key stakeholders would have been present at those meetings. The DEA, the court, the Ministry of the Environment. I want to put funding to the government. I've brought an expert from outside. I want to ensure that the information I provide to the experts is the right one to prepare the report, bring in the key stakeholders. Those are the ones that you see reflected, Mr. Speaker, in all the other Lloyd's Register reports. And yet here, those worksheets do not form part of this public. What is it that we are not being told? Who are the experts present in the room with the experts from the Lord's Register? Who sat round the table with the Lord's team? Who introduced them to the Lord's Register researcher when she was here? More and more questions are sparking for the leaders of the position to answer. And the issue that they have not yet dealt with, how do the leaders of the opposition and Mr. Hammond deal with the fact that they said that this report had not been prepared by a commercial interest, and yet we now know it was prepared exactly by a commercial interest with a vested interest in LNG, as part of subsequently confirmed and has done so again in the 29th of June remarks. But the people in one respect with such bare-faced inconsistency, it is indeed a pity that parliamentary practice does not allow one to say that persons in such situations are no more than bare-faced lies. But one must embrace the truth, and we cannot therefore be so clear and explicit in describing the obvious untruth or elicited and identified. When we think as far as how this could have been handled by the leaders of Britain, if we were genuinely concerned about the state of LNG, we don't have to look as far as the UK to see how things should be done. That honourable members would care to recall the Hiraldi Inquiry report. When that report was made public, members of the opposition did not need to read it in the press. I believe I acted entirely properly in making a copy available to news editors and to the leader of the opposition 48 hours before it was published. I made it available to the press, so that they could probably prepare to ask questions at the press conference, and I made it available to the leader of the opposition himself. Now, there was a real concern about LNG, and not just a political game being played. Why didn't the leader of the opposition inform me, like I had him, and say, Fabian, because I know that foreign ministers are specific in this case. Fabian, I have what I consider to be a worrying report available about LNG. You should read it before I hold the press conference in the next 48 hours, or in the next 24 hours, or in the next hour, or in the next half hour, or after the press conference. Fabian, I just published this report to the media. It's not going to be up on our website for another 5 hours. Here is a copy. Did you do that, Mr. Speaker? Not so specific. He was not prepared to treat me with the courtesy that I was treated to him. He denigrated and disparaged himself by not extending to me the courtesy I had extended to him. I offer him advanced sites of a report. He doesn't actually put his report on the website for hours after his press conference. I offer him an olive branch in December last year, and I get vitriolic attacks at the beginning of the new year. That is what most denigrate and disparage the honourable member in the eyes of the public. Finally, Mr. Speaker, reliable information presented to the government on a number of fronts relating to the staff group of companies, including the Lloyd's report, have prompted investigation, and this may require action to be taken in the coming weeks. I do not wish to preempt the outcome of these investigations, nor indeed do I think it would be appropriate to do so. Simply say that the government is very confident of the stance it has taken throughout. I do not want to comment on other investigations that are ongoing and which are not being carried out by the government. We will rely on the experts to advise them and ensure safety, and I would invite the leader of the opposition, before further relying on the Spark report in his reply, to consider its provenance and the real motives of Spark in providing him with the documentation that they gave to him, especially given that they now appear to be at odds over the future of LNG as they face a clear situation. The government and Lloyd's Register, acting independently and doing what they do best, which is safety, will show in the coming months that the opposition presentation of the Lloyd's Register preliminary report was just, as described by them, a conflation and distortion which our community can safely disregard. But the judgment of the public will be harsh indeed on the leader of the opposition. The public will not soon forget that the people he said were the top experts in the world say that he has conflated and distorted their report. Those who support Bolton Easter support is no the LNG platform are actually now saying vigorously the opposite. The public will not ignore the surface of a spark report which Spark does not agree with. The public will not forgive the clown who told an untruth to the face of the Chief Minister and who the leader of the opposition chooses to believe. Indeed, the question of who is the greater fool, the fool or the fool who follows him, may soon come into sharper focus in relation to the leader of the opposition, because it has just been a seat for interest far beyond our cause. Mr. Peter has called me to apologize over my statement that the report has been redacted. It has already been proved to have been put in the public domain with key parts missing. Its presentation has been described as worse than redacted, but as distorted by those who prepared it. This at one time it was claimed that the GOC actually commissioned the report to spark funding. That point could be resolved by him instructing Lloyd's Register or calling upon Spark, who was his client, to have Lloyd's Register Energy release the full and original, unredacted and unexpurgated report directly to Mr. Speaker, so that all members may have access to a copy, the provenance of which can then, there can then be no doubt as to, and that there is nothing missing for all our students. I'm calling him now to do so. Mr. Speaker, the government has acted responsibly throughout. He condemned the conflation and distortion which Lloyd's Register has stated that Mr. Peterson, Mr. Hammond, and Spark have engaged in, and in agreeing with the way that Lloyd's Register has characterized the abuse and misuse of this report in this way, I commend the amendment of the motion to the Council.
I now propose a question in the terms of the amendment to the motion moved by the Chief Minister. And by the Leader of the Opposition. Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Chief Minister and having stuck in my throat to call him such, has spent 30 to 45 minutes of his speech trying to justify his outrageous allegations during his budget reply the last time we debated this matter. Let's be clear about this, Mr. Speaker. He used the budget reply to turn Parliament into a kangaroo court, making allegations of the worst sort against his principal political opponent without any shred of evidence at all, Mr. Speaker. And let's be clear at all, as well, that the reason why he turned Parliament into a kangaroo court during his budget reply was because he wanted to destroy the reputation of his principal political opponent. He wasn't concerned about truth. He wasn't concerned about debating the issue. It was a blatant attempt at character assassination in making vile allegations in this House about corruption and about the leader of the opposition being involved in a plot to cut the electricity to families, to babies, to mothers, and to businesses in Gibraltar. Unprecedented, Mr. Speaker, in this House. It's never been done. And Mr. Speaker, when you reflect on those words, I want you to reflect on the first speech that the Honourable Gentleman gave as leader of the GSOC in 2011, and he said this: "The people of Gibraltar are tired of the politics of insult and innuendo. The people of Gibraltar want a contest of ideas, policies, and commitments. This is not a time for mudslinging for empty promises. It is not a time for spin and propaganda. It is not a time for character assassination. This is the politics of the past, and it will be rejected by our people. And despite, Mr. Speaker, ignorable words in 2011, he proceeded to undertake the biggest character assassination that we have ever witnessed in this House, protected, it has to be said, by parliamentary privilege. And Mr. Speaker, I do want to take him to some of the words that he used in order to describe me during his budget reply. In a fast phrase, he said this, and I quote, he, referring to me, has been humbled in having taken for questioning the safety of LNG as a fuel for Gibraltar. 100,000 pounds, Mr. Speaker, for questioning. Mr. Speaker, when it comes to accepting cash to question the government, members of Parliament in the United Kingdom have resigned for far less than what honourable gentlemen have been found doing. End quote. Then said, there, referring to me and Mr. Hammond, the report, is one of people who will get an awful lot of money if we are not able to do the right thing for our community. Then, referring to me and to Mr. Hammond, get elected, they cancel the plan, and then they give these people spark either another opportunity to bid or have already done a deal that they are going to give them the power station or the facility. A vile allegation, Mr. Speaker, of corruption. So that is what it amounts to. And look how long the many things, and the honourable gentleman opposite delight in reminding me of my political past and the fact that I started off my political career in the party that my father founded, ending up as the leader of the Gibraltar Social Democrats. And I suffer this criticism on the team, despite the fact that there are many members on the government benches who have also changed political parties, some more than twice. But when I retire from politics, people will criticize me for that, or they will be indifferent to me, or they will think that I'm competent or incompetent. But they will never say that Daniel Keaton was corrupt, because that is not an alleyway that I am prepared to walk into. And then the speaker, he said, quote, I do not mind telling the public, Mr. Speaker, that on the night of the Germany game, whilst the Germany game was still on, because of the power cut I was with Manoa Alessio and the minister responsible, actually down at the staff plant, down at Gibraltar, to try to understand what was going wrong. Of course, I did not know really what was happening at the time, as we now know, in the light of the new dawn, that has shown even in what has been happening and going on between the leader of the opposition and staff. You see, Mr. Speaker, what we have here in this election year is a disgruntled conference in standing with the leader of the opposition to turn an election. The reason to speak up and tell the nation to bear a potential interference with critical national infrastructure. We are investigating whether power cuts we have experienced have been brought about in order to destabilize the government. At the time, when the opposition wanted to have a debate about power generation and its future, I am not a conspiracy theorist, but the coincidence is that we have experienced with the failure of the spark plant and the timing of it, as well as the timing of the collusion between the leader of the opposition and spark, leads us to investigate these things. Let it be clear, Mr. Speaker, our gaming companies, our lawyers, our accountants, our insurance companies, our finance centre, all our business leaders, the elderly, the infirm, those with babies and young children, not least our football fans, will never forgive the honourable, the leader of the opposition, if we have suffered power cuts to push the issue of power generation further up the political agenda. And Mr. Speaker, it is true that when I raised the point of order, he then took half a step back and he said, well, the leader of the opposition says successful. But Mr. Speaker, it is incredulous that a chief minister, that a leader of the House, knowing the rules of the House, can make an allegation of that nature without having a shred of evidence at his disposal, Mr. Speaker. Because what you don't do, unless of course the objective of the exercise is what I said at the beginning of my speech, that character assassination of your principal political opponent, to bring allegations of that nature into this parliament, knowing that there is nothing that your political opponent can do about it because he's protected by parliamentary privilege. And that is what is evidence, Mr. Speaker. That has never, ever happened in the history of this parliament, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, of course we have no evidence of collusion between me and Spark and the power cut. Mr. Speaker, what the honourable gentleman is actually keeping from the nation is that Spark don't even operate the temporary power generator, Mr. Speaker, because the temporary power generators are operated by a renowned international company, Energy Caterpillar, with their own employees, and Spark are effectively a go-between between the government and Energy Caterpillar, Mr. Speaker. And for his theory, without evidence, that he took a half a step backwards, which is a real mistake that we've made, he still hasn't apologized for it, is that for his theory to be correct, there has to be a conspiracy between the leader of the opposition, Energy Caterpillar, a renowned company with interests all over the world, and Spark, Mr. Speaker. Can we even say especially to Mr. Speaker that the honourable Chief Minister has referred to about a friend Spark? They also say, I don't know, I'm not a party to it, that Energy Caterpillar had investigated the source of the electricity cut that he complained about, and that they had concluded that it didn't emanate within their power plant, and that a third party had also been brought in order to investigate the very same power plant, and that they too had concluded that it emanated outside the power plant. And Mr. Speaker, what he also does not refer to is this, that prior to the Spark power generators being brought to Gibraltar, I think it was in April or May 2014, the government had in place temporary power turbines. And we know from answers to questions in this House that out of the 30 or so power cuts that were experienced by Gibraltar during the time that those temporary power turbines were in place, half of those were due to defects within the power turbines. That's the government's own answer within the parliament. Well, that too, as a result of some conspiracy between the leader of the opposition and whoever manages those temporary power turbines, that we not start, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, he has consistently said that this election is going to be the dirtiest election on record. But let me tell the honourable gentleman, it's certainly not going to be dirty because of anything that we are doing or intend to do on this side of the House, Mr. Speaker. And my guiding philosophy in relation to how I conduct the next election from Perry will be his word in his maiden speech as leader of the GSOP, Mr. Speaker. That is going to be my guiding word, Mr. Speaker, as to how I conduct the election from Perry. But Mr. Speaker, strip away the kangaroo court, strip away the overt purpose of his budget reply and much of what he has said today, the political assassination of the leader of the opposition. I mean, what is this about? What is this debate about? Well, Mr. Speaker, it is about safety and it is about location, Mr. Speaker. If something does go wrong at either the LNG power station or the banking installation, what is the effect on our schools? What is the effect on our hospitals? And what is the effect on people living in the vicinity of those installations? That is the real issue at stake, Mr. Speaker. Everything else is absolutely irrelevant. Because, Mr. Speaker, no matter how much one reduces risk, and Mr. Speaker, we have accepted, and indeed the Lord's report itself provides, that risk can be substantially reduced. What you cannot reduce is consequence. What you cannot reduce and mitigate is the consequences of an accident at an LNG bunkering installation or an LNG power station for the people living in those areas, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Gentleman, not today, but on other occasions, one of the critiques of the Lord's report is that the Lord's report is based on two tanks of 10,000 cubic meters. The doesn't say, of course, the government came out with an invited expression of interest for a tank with a minimum capacity of 12,000 cubic meters. A minimum capacity. And the staff report is based on two tanks of 10,000 cubic meters each. But what he doesn't say, or I don't know whether he hasn't read the report, is that the report assumes that there are safety measures in place to actually reduce any leakage of LNG to between 60 seconds and I think it is 5 minutes. Between 60 seconds and 5 minutes, it is not possible, Mr. Speaker, for 20,000 cubic meters of LNG to be released. So the size of natural storage facility, in many respects, is irrelevant if what one takes the premise of the report at face value. And Mr. Speaker, what we have seemingly failed to do is to alleviate the concern, which is his responsibility as Chief Minister of Gibraltar, of the parents of those children that go to those schools, of the patients that use the hospital, and of the people that live in the vicinity of the LNG bunkering installation and the LNG power station, Mr. Speaker. Because 4 years down the road, come back to the history of this in a moment, 4 years down the road from when he first took the decision to cancel the DFD contract to build a diesel power station in Lafay Barracks, the only report that has been published, Mr. Speaker, is the report that the DFD has published, Mr. Speaker. That is the reality, and that is the reality that he needs to wriggle away from. Because it was his responsibility, not mine, but his responsibility as Chief Minister of Gibraltar to alleviate those reasonable concerns of those people. And Mr. Speaker, he has done everything in his power to to attempt to divert attention from that central issue of safety, to attempt to spread the Lord's report with wild allegations, Mr. Speaker, which is repeated today, that the Lord's report had been substantially redacted. Well, Mr. Speaker, in his interview, the day before his budget reply, what he said was that the Lord's report had been substantially redacted by some 80 pages, Mr. Speaker. That's what he said. So when people listen to his fair allegations of fair redaction, what happened to his original allegation that the Lord's report had been substantially redacted by 80 pages, Mr. Speaker? And he challenged me to come to the task to say whether the report that's been published by staff was unredacted or a final version of the report. Well, I can tell you, Honourable Chief Minister, that I have seen emails because I have insisted on disclosure of those emails between Lloyds and staff, where Lloyds tells staff, we enclose the final version of our report, Mr. Speaker. And the enclosure, the attachment, is exactly the same as the attachment or the report that has now been disclosed by Lloyd. And so, from 80 pages of redaction, which is the allegation that he made the day before his budget reply, we now find that the only page that was missing was, I think, the second or third page that identifies Spock. That is it, Mr. Speaker. Nothing else. And Mr. Speaker, if he has evidence that the Lloyd report has been substantially redacted in other ways, well, let him bring it to the House. I am telling him that what I have seen in the communication between Lloyd and staff is that the final version has been disclosed. And he knows very well, Mr. Speaker, that if there had been smoking gun in the comparative of the final report that's been published by staff and the one that we published, the second page missing, he would have already brought it to this House, and he has not been able to do so. And all he continues to do is refer to innuendo and further redactions and words missing here and words missing there. And I don't know, Mr. Speaker, where he gets it is from, because he gave an interview in GBC, and I'll come to that in a moment on another point, and he said, well, Lloyd, for confidentiality reasons, I cannot talk about the staff report. But then he says, again, he says that the Lloyd's report had been substantially redacted, and that Lloyd's are conducting a comparison between the report that we published and the one that staff has published. But Mr. Speaker, what is it? Is it that Lloyd's, because of confidentiality reasons, cannot talk about the report? Or is it the verdict in the same sense is a contradiction? Or is it that the Lord has communicated to the Honourable Gentleman that they're conducting a comparative between the two? Well, I can tell you now, Mr. Speaker, that based on the email that I have seen containing the attachment of the final report, the one that Spark has published, is exactly the same as the one that we have published. And Speaker, he then said about the Lloyd's report that the Lloyd's report was based on a single skin tank, Mr. Speaker. And we now know that it wasn't based on a single skin tank. Again, I don't know where the Honourable Gentleman gets his information from. And Mr. Speaker, I want to pay tribute. I know that he has become almost a bogeyman, a best noir of the Honourable Gentleman and some of his colleagues opposite, but I want to pay tribute to the chairman of the GSD, Trevor Hammond, for his hard work, for his dedication, and for the work in particular that he has done in relation to drawing attention to the risk of LNG to the community in Gibraltar, Mr. Speaker. And I hope that the chairman of the GSD, who has been doing all that hard work without being a member of this House, will soon join me in this House as a member of Parliament, as part of a GOP slate, and whether it's on this side of the House or on that side of the House, only the people of Gibraltar will decide, Mr. Speaker, that I wish to pay tribute to his hard work today. And Mr. Speaker, because he has singularly failed to alleviate the concerns of all those people in relation to the safety of LNG, and the safety in particular, Mr. Speaker, of LNG bunkering at the Detach Mole or the North Mole or the LNG power station, barely 300 metres away from Waterport Territory, he obviously has to turn this debate into a pump and duty show, or turn it as he did during his budget reply into a personalised debate with no other purpose than to character assassinate his main political opponent. And the reality, Mr. Speaker, is that the government has played footloose with the safety of people. The government has ignored the issue of power supply. And to demonstrate that, and to make good on that case, Mr. Speaker, I want to go back to the beginning. Because, Mr. Speaker, their manifesto commitment in relation to this is as follows. It's at page 32 of his manifesto under power generation alternative energy. And they say this is what they promise. We will ensure that the Gibraltar's power needs are provided for and any binding agreement entered into respect of the new power station will be respected. End quote. Any binding agreement entered into, I will find it the government, in respect of the new power station will be respected. And the bottom line that we cannot get away from either today or indeed prior to the election is that if we had kept to that manifesto promise, Mr. Speaker, our power station at Lasley Barrett would have been built by now, and the power cut would have been a thing of the past. That's why you have to disgrace and give that blame to everybody else. For his own failure, Mr. Speaker. For his own failure. And Mr. Speaker, from the very beginning, he has tried to justify the breaking of that manifesto promise. He has sought to argue, indeed, with a ludicrous today, but it's specifically in relation to the Lasley Barrett power station. He has sought to argue that the Lasley Barrett power station had these huge chimneys sprouting and fighting at most as if this were the Industrial Revolution in the 19th century. But Mr. Speaker, I asked the people of Gibraltar, would a responsible opposition, as they then were, or a responsible party or parties, would they have agreed, Mr. Speaker, to commit themselves to honouring our Lasley Barrett power station if concept had been signed? If it was a guided vote, Mr. Speaker? Of course not, Mr. Speaker. Of course not. Because by then we've already seen, Mr. Speaker, the past. By then we've already seen the environmental impact assessment. It's a contrived attempt, as much that the Honourable Gentleman contrived, to basically just simply justify the fact that he broke his promise to the people of Gibraltar to honour any binding agreement that the GOP government had signed in relation to the power station, the Lasley Barrett power station. And Mr. Speaker, when during the budget speech last year, in 2014, he announced to his House that the contract had been awarded to the French company that we ourselves had contracted with, won the tender for the Lasley Barrett power station for $77 million, he gave an interview in the lobby of this Parliament. What? in the lobby of this Parliament just after his budget speech, and pointing to the fact that the GOP lasting ballot power station would cost £120 million, and their power station was going to cost £77 million, he said this, and I quote, "One is tempted to ask who was going to pocket that half the difference it was going to cost." End quote. Another allegation, Mr. Speaker, of corruption, this time, not against me, but against those in the GOP government that was handling this particular case. And as he well knew, Mr. Speaker, once he made that comment, intended as it was to sow the seeds in people's minds that somebody within the GOP had pocketed nearly £70 million, can you well knew the £120 million that we had contracted with a French company for the new castle was not only for the new castle. It included a new power station, storage facilities, an entirely new distribution network throughout the entirety of Gibraltar, and a new building offices for Gibraltar, Mr. Speaker. How on earth you can make that kind of allegation and keep a straight face? Well, Mr. Speaker, only he can do it, because I certainly cannot, and I hope that I'm never ever in a position to put a face, make that kind of allegation about a previous government without a threat of evidence. But Mr. Speaker, it's only a safety issue that his government stands politically condemned. Mr. Speaker, when he decided to break that contract with a cost to the taxpayer of £5 million that we had signed with a French company, he announced in 2012, Mr. Speaker, that the government had decided to build an LNG power station at the North Mall. So the government took a policy decision to build an LNG power station at the North Mall in 2012. At the beginning of 2013, the government went out for tender for that LNG power station at the North Mall, and tenders closed on the 30th of May 2013. And we know, Mr. Speaker, because of statements that have been made in this House and outside it, that the very first time that the Honourable Gentleman made contact with their so called expert, Mr. Speaker, the Health and Safety Executive, was on the 7th of June. Because in that carefully worded press statement, at the end of last year, they said that the first contact with the Health and Safety Executive was on the 7th of June. And the Health and Safety Executive came to Gibraltar for the first time in January of 2014, Mr. Speaker. It is not possible for the government to have had any kind an expert report on the safety of LNG prior to, at the very earliest, January of 2014, but he could not have done it before the tender for the LNG power station closed in May of 2013. And I ask, Mr. Speaker, what kind of a responsible government, what kind of a responsible government makes the policy decision to locate an LNG power station at the North Mall in 2012, gave out a tender, awarded the tender, without even having an expert report, Mr. Speaker? That is the bottom line here about the way that the government has handled this particular issue. And Mr. Speaker, throughout 2013 and 2014, and you can go back to our press releases and you can refer to them, we had reserved our position in relation to LNG. We had reserved our position in relation to the safety implications of building an LNG power station in North Mole. But what really brought this debate to a head was the disclosure during our leaders' debate in December of 2014 that the government was about to enter into contract, or was exploring entering into contract, with commercial entities in order to allow them, not the government, them, to build LNG storage facilities that would then supply the power station, but in return, allow those entities to do LNG bunkering in the world. And that is when we took, and started to take, a more robust position in relation to this, Mr. Speaker. And it's when that we started to ask, well, where are all the safety reports in relation to all of this? And when the 19th of February 2014, in press release 95 of 2015, the government said this. Quote, all safety reports associated with the proposed power station have been obtained, end quote, have been obtained. All the safety reports associated with the power station, with the proposed power station, have been obtained. And then he said, quote, we are not in a position to publish these reports at this time due to the commercially sensitive nature of information they contain. End quote, Mr. Speaker. The dreaded commercially sensitive information, which they constantly deploy in order to achieve answering questions in the House, and which they have deployed on a further area occasions, Mr. Speaker, in order to achieve to answer questions about credit finance. Fast forward 4 months, 2 weeks ago. And when I was getting a given an interview with BBC, which everyone is talking about, Mr. Speaker, everyone is talking about, where he said, but the weather expert report, but the weather expert report, but the proposals are still not mature. Well, how mature the proposals need to be, Mr. Speaker, when the government already opened the contract for the power station, Mr. Speaker. And the reality is that 4 years down the line, his government has only just published an environmental impact assessment, only just this week. There's been no consultation about the proposal. 4 years after he made the policy decision to locate an LNG power station at the North Mole, and indeed 2 years at the very least after he made the policy decision of allowing LNG bunkering at the attack for the North Mole, and there are no expert reports, Mr. Speaker. So he cannot make good his assertions or the assertions of the Minister for the Environment that the proposed LNG bunkering installations in particular are 100% safe. He cannot make out that assertion, Mr. Speaker. I'm returning, Mr. Speaker, to my original question. If something does go wrong, what is the effect on our schools? What is the effect on our hospitals? What is the effect of the people living in the vicinity? Because I would have expected any reasonably responsible government to have made sure that it knows the answer to that before it makes policy decisions about locating LNG power stations at the North Mole and bunkering installations at either the Detroit or the North Mole, Mr. Speaker. I would have expected that from a reasonably responsible government. And the reality is that we cannot provide the assurances, Mr. Speaker, that people living in the area want from him, not from me, but from him, Mr. Speaker, from him. And he may say, of course, that risk If you cannot eliminate risk altogether, precisely what have been, what we've been saying from the very beginning. You cannot eliminate risk, but you cannot also mitigate consequence in the context of the location that those have decided to locate this LNG bunkering installation and this LNG power station, Mr. Speaker. Because I have already told him that the assumptions in the Lord's report are based on a release between 60 seconds and 5 minutes. It's not even based on a total release of the content of those two tanks. And Mr. Speaker, if we are going to fight the next election, no to LNG in these locations, of course we are going to do that. We do not believe that playing foot loose, because that is what the Honourable Gentleman is doing, with the safety of these individuals, of the people living there, is the right way to go about power supply and Gibraltar, Mr. Speaker. And I give the people of that area, of West Side 1, West Side 2, of Waterport Terraces, and all those who will be affected if there is ever, God forbid, an accident at the LNG bunkering installation or indeed the LNG power station, I give them a commitment that if we are elected into government, we will not go ahead with these bunkering installations in these locations, and we will not go ahead with an LNG power station at the North Mall. And Mr. Speaker, before he said to me, because you see, he wants to put it in a different location. No one, Mr. Speaker, has placed before any kind of plans whatsoever at all about locating an energy banking installation anywhere else in Gibraltar, let alone anywhere else in Gibraltar, that is safe. But of course, if the government were to come to us and they were to say to us, well, look, instead of doing it at the Detroit Mall or the North Mall, we are prepared to look at LNG bunkering somewhere else. But we are prepared to sit down with the government and look at those locations. We are prepared to look at any location that the government has in mind on its merits. But the government is not going to be looking at alternatives, Mr. Speaker. The government is hell-bent on moving ahead with its plans in this area. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to tell him that that is a very bad idea indeed. And I hope for his sake that there is never an accident in the future in these locations, Mr. Speaker. Because he is going to have to defend himself in the light of all the comments that he has made during the last 4 years, and in particular, the comments that he has made this year. And Mr. Speaker, I leave my contribution in this debate with this. The Honourable Gentleman keeps on referring to Lloyds and how Lloyds are disappointed and how Lloyds claim that the report was distorted. So, Mr. Speaker, until I actually see and hear it directly from Lloyds that they are accusing the DND of having distorted or conflated their report, there is nothing that I will believe, certainly not the way that the Honourable Gentleman seeks to distort quotes from Lloyds, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, he has also, for example, claimed that Lloyds are very angry about the way that the DND has made use of the report. I have consistently said from the very beginning that Lloyds Register are not against the use of LNG either here in Gibraltar or anywhere else in the world. Of course not. Lloyds are in the business of producing safety reports, and they have produced safety reports in relation to LNG in many places across the world, Mr. Speaker. But it isn't all about LNG per se.
It's about LNG in these locations. And let me tell you this about these allegations that men are concerned about the way that the DOD have dealt with this particular issue of floated or distorted their report. This is because before the report was published, in other words, the Lord's report was published, I met the expert that produced the Lord's report, Mr. Speaker. And I told him very, very clearly, I left him in absolutely no doubt at all, that if God provided me with a copy of that report, that the DOD would make the report public. I told the expert, Mr. Speaker, there's been no misleading by the DOD of anyone, Mr. Speaker. Not me, not the people of the world.
Does any honourable member wish to before we carry on with the debate, given the hour, maybe that there are other members that want to contribute? I'm going to propose that the House be now recessed until 3 o'clock for this debate to complete.
The House will now recess.